ready.
Man, this whole society got our women looking at themselves crazy, man. Can you imagine if a dude was walking around talking about he didn't want to wear a pair of khakis because it made his dick look big, man?
For real talk.
You ain't ready for the relationship your grandmother and granddaddy had. You ready to leave your dude if he don't text you back fast enough.
All the time.
And see, that's what's so crazy to me, right? Because you can be against police brutality and not want cops to die. The two ideas ain't mutually exclusive.
Welcome to the Span Report with your host, Mr. Span.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Span Report podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Span, and this is episode number 73 of the report. Yeah, man, it's been another week, and I had to reschedule. Just when I thought I was going to have it going back on Saturdays, I'm back doing the show on a Sunday, but I'm here, and had to do some moving around, man. Had to move the scheduling of the show around. I was originally supposed to have Clove and Shirley of the Chonilla.com podcast on, but they had something come up. You know what I mean? Life happens. So I've got them scheduled to come back next week, and we can chop it up with Clove and Shirley and see what's been going on with them. And I can't wait to get those guys on the show. I've been a real big fan of them for a long time, and I can't wait to share them with you guys here. But outside of that, man, it ain't been a whole hell of a lot of shit going on for you, boy. Outside of work. You know what I mean? Outside of work, man, I even overtime, had to put in some overtime today. Went to work on a Sunday morning, man. I haven't done that in a long time. Haven't done that in so long, man. It was weird waking up on a Sunday morning at like 6:10 and driving the expressway, driving on the roads, and nobody is fucking out there. I mean, it looked like an episode of The Walking Dead. It was just that eerie, man. It was like a nice cloudy, foggy kind of atmosphere this morning. It was real misty and nobody was out, man. Hardly anybody was out. But yeah, man, gotta pay for shit. Gotta pay for shit. That overtime was sorely needed. So yeah. Yeah, but without further ado, man, let's get off into this show, man. Of course, Before we get into the show, I got to let you guys know how you can get in touch with me here at the Span Report Podcast and let your voice be heard. You can hit me up at the Span Report hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave me those voicemail messages. I will play those on the show and, of course, respond in kind. You can also leave me an email. The email to the show is feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com. Send me those emails. Of course, I will read those and reply to those here on the show. I got a few emails to reply to today. You can also hit your boy up on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms, of course, is Mr._Span. So hit me up on both of those platforms. We can chop it up on Twitter and Instagram. For all of your Span Report needs, go to thespanreport.com. All of the episodes, all of the guest appearances, everything you need as far as the Span Report is concerned, go to thespanreport.com and check it out. And also, I would love for you guys to leave me a review. Leave me a review on iTunes and Stitcher. Let folks know exactly how you're feeling about the Span Report podcast. Spread the word. It really helps the show grow when you do that. 5-star review, 4-star review. Let me know what you're thinking. 5-star reviews will get read on the show. Shout out to Rod and Karen over at the Black Guy Who Tips for that. And yeah, man. Yeah, that's how we're getting down here at the Span Report this evening. Yeah. So, yeah, I wanted to talk to you guys about something. It was one thing that happened for me this weekend, right? And it was a real nice thing to happen for me over the weekend. Of course, you guys know on the last episode of the Span Report, I let you guys know that I was engaged. I'm getting married in August, and it's funny, that shit comes up real quick. It comes up real quick, and as part of the marriage, my fiance's father wanted to do something for me. You know, he wanted to contribute. He wanted to be a part of this whole plan and the celebration and everything else. So he decided that he wanted to take your boy out, man. Take me out to go buy a suit. Right now, mind you, I'm doing okay, but I ain't doing like his okay. You know what I mean? And, you know, he took me to, we went to Brooks Brothers. We went to Brooks Brothers to go get my suit for the wedding. And let me tell you, I didn't know, I had no idea how much Brooks Brothers was costing somebody's pockets. I really didn't. I had no idea how much that stuff was, right? I'd never really been to Brooks Brothers. Only one time, I think, me and my girl, we went to buy her dad a bow tie at Brooks Brothers, and I think that bow tie was like $80. And I was like, Jesus, for a bow tie, that's $80, right? Now, understand, your man Span is used to buying suits off the rack. You know what I mean? Let me take that back. I haven't bought a suit in years. let's just make that plain. Like, the last suit I bought, it was when I was becoming a Freemason and I had to buy my suit from a uniform, right? And I bought that joint off the rack. I was 22 when I bought that suit. I still have that suit. I haven't worn it in I don't know how long, but yeah, it's dated. And it's just, it was bad suit. You know, you could tell I bought it off the rack and everything else, right? So, we go to Brooks Brothers, and it's funny because he knows like all of the salespeople there by name. So Mr. Smith is like, he's a frequent buyer at the Young Brooks Brothers, right? So we go there. He's looking for I think his name's Tim. First thing he did, he asked for Tim, and we go upstairs. And Tim's showing the suit to someone else. And he finally got over to us. And, you know, I'm looking at some of the dress shirts that they had. They had a sale, man. Like, it was like three dress shirts for $229. This is, now, mind you, your man Span ain't used to this, right? Your man Span is used to, like, if I go buy a dress shirt, I will go to K&G's. I will go to Burlington Coat Factory. I will go to Marshall's. I will go to JCPenney, Sears, Kohl's, Macy's. I can do that, right? That's within my realm. That's why I'm like, okay, yeah, this is a nice shirt. You know what I mean? This is cool right here. But nah, three shirts. That was the sale. Three shirts for $229. And it was then where it kind of clicked. Like, yo, there's some really nice shit in here. Right? This is some really nice shit. And then on top of that, it was funny. One of the things that kind of caught my eye was the fact that there was this one guy who was there who was shopping for another suit. He was shopping for a suit, but he was there. He already had a sport coat on. He had like a button-up shirt, and he had on khakis and boat shoes. And the thought that first came to my mind was this was the quintessential yacht club kind of guy. Right. I thought this was like a cliche that they have in like movies and things like that. I saw this dude in real life, sport coat, khaki shorts, boat shoes, button up shirt. And he was there right there. Like, and I was just like, okay, this is where we at. So, right. So, I'm talking to Tim and he's asking me, you know, what kind of material I want to wear, you know, and I don't know. Like I said, I haven't had a tailor-made suit since I was 10 years old. My mother's boyfriend got me and my brother tailor-made suits when we were 10 years old. Well, when I was 10, my brother was 8. And that was the last time I had a tailor-made suit. So he's asking me these questions, and I'm feeling kind of lost or whatever. And I'm trying to tell him, I said, well, you know, the wedding is in New Orleans. It's in August. It's hot and muggy in New Orleans in August. So I want to wear something that's light in color and that can kind of keep me cool. So I went with like a, I forget the name. It was some sort of wool suit, but it breathes, right? So it lets air in some side of it. It was a real nice suit, man, right? So I go in, I try it, you know, I try it on, and he gives me a shirt so they can figure out, you know, my, you know, the size shirts that I would need and everything else. And, you know, we go through the whole tailoring aspect, you know, whether or not they wanted to take it in the back, how was it fitting in the front? Did I have enough room in the back? Because your man Span me gaining weight. I got a little ass on me now. So, yeah, man. It was cool, though, man. It was cool. Afterwards, we had to pick the tie, the color of the tie. And I just had fun, like, just going through that whole process, man. It was real nice. And me and Mr. Smith, man, it was a nice moment for me and him to sit up and just have a moment amongst ourselves. Like I said, I spoke with him a year ago for permission to marry his daughter, and he was really excited about it. And I really do appreciate Mrs. Smith hooking your boy up with a brand new suit, man, tailor-made suit, so I could look good when I, you know, take this girl to be my wife, man. So, yeah, shout out to Mr. Smith, man. I know he doesn't listen to the show, and that's by design. But, yeah, man, thank you to Mr. Smith for hooking your boy up with a Brooks Brothers suit. I will be looking good on the day I get married. Yeah. But, yeah, man. Sport coats and khaki shorts, man. That's where the name of the episode comes from, man. That guy in the store, man, he really was he really had it going. And I thought that was some real cliche shit. But, yeah, that, it is what it is, right? Hold on a second. All right. Now, outside of that, we know that this is it has typically been a pretty serious show as of late. There's been some pretty serious things going on as of late. And unfortunately, no. to a certain degree, that, you know, this is going to be somewhat more of the same, right? But it needs to be addressed. It needs to be addressed because these are things that I really want to kind of tackle. These are things I think that we should really kind of eradicate and bring attention to, so that, you know, these folks know that how foolish they look, and we get a chance to mock them. Excuse me, and everything else, right? So I was on YouTube, and I'm perusing videos on YouTube, and one of the suggested videos, actually, ironically, it was suggested from one of my videos. It was a video I did years ago. It was called I'm a Christian Freemason, right? So it was actually one of the suggested videos from the video I did years ago, right? And I came across this video, and there was this preacher from Tempe, Arizona, who, for whatever reason, thought that he had the cure for AIDS, right? And so in his cure for AIDS, he said he found the cure for AIDS in the Bible, right? He found it in the Bible. I'm going to let him explain it to you.
Sermon, you know, they're filled with disease because of the judgment of God. Now, listen to these statistics, my friend. First of all, approximately 1.6% of the U.S. population will identify themselves as a homo. And 0.7% are bi. Well, you know, that means nothing to me. They're all bi as far as anybody who's a homo or bi, it's all the same category. Sodomite is what the Bible would call them. And what the Bible actually says, and by the way, turn to Leviticus 20:13, because I actually discovered the cure for AIDS, okay? Now, this is the cure for AIDS, okay? And, you know, everybody's talking about, let's have an AIDS-free world by 2020, or let's have an AIDS-free... Look, we could have an AIDS-free world by Christmas, you know? Or at least, okay, it wouldn't be totally AIDS-free, but we'd be like 90-some percent AIDS-free by Christmas if we would follow this. Okay, here's what the Bible says, Leviticus 20:13. If a man also lie with mankind as he lieth with the woman, okay, it says, even both of them have committed an abomination. They shall surely be put to death. Their blood shall be upon them. And that, my friend, is the cure for AIDS. It was right there in the Bible all along. And they're out spending billions of dollars in research and testing. It's curable. Right there. Because if you executed the homos like God recommends, you wouldn't have all this AIDS running rampant. Say, well, I just don't believe that. Okay, well, let's get the statistics in. Since you don't believe what the Bible says, let's see if you believe science. Because this is what science tells us. That first of all, even though only, according to the Washington Post, that radical Christian conspiracy newspaper, according to the Washington Post, 2.3% of the population are homos. But 78% of new HIV infections among males are homos.
All right.
That's not how it works. That's not how any of this works.
Listen, here's one of the things, here's one of the reasons why I have to continue to a certain degree, separate myself from a lot of folks who would call themselves Christians, right? Because a lot of times I've been called, I've been told I'm going to hell because I'm a Freemason, right? I've been told I'm going to hell because I'm a Freemason. So if this kind of person is the kind of person that's telling me I'm going to hell, then I'm cool. Right? Because I'm, you know, I don't get how here in America, we have a lot of folks who are afraid of what they would deem Sharia law, right? It's a lot of folks who walk around talking about the Muslims are threatening to kill us. The Muslims want to curtail our freedom of speech. The Muslims want to dictate how we operate as a country. All of these things, right? We hear this propaganda all of the time. We hear that America is a Christian nation. Never mind the fact that a lot of the founding fathers didn't necessarily believe in the God of the Bible, right? But we, for whatever reason, there's so many people who believe that the United States of America was founded on Christian principles, right? And so you listen to someone who's supposed to be a pastor of the Church of Christ, right? Christ walked around and showed love to everyone, right? Christ went to the least of us, right? Christ went to a whole lot of folks that a lot of the folks in the church right now wouldn't necessarily talk to. He talked to the pimps. He talked to the prostitutes. He talked to the drug dealers. He talked to the tax collectors. He talked to all of these folks, and he gave them a message of inclusion and love. He also gave a lot of messages of condemnation, but Christ's universal message was to love him, and that those who believed in him would have everlasting life and all of that, right? So when you hear someone go to the Bible and they go to the book of Leviticus, and in the book of Leviticus, there's a lot of laws that a lot of Christians in the book of Leviticus just simply ain't following, right? You can go to the dietary laws about not eating shellfish, not eating shrimp, not eating pork. A lot of folks attribute that to just being Muslim, but no, you're not supposed to eat pork according to the Bible as well. There's a lot of different laws in Leviticus that everybody ain't following, but yet and still so many Christians want to point out the laws against homosexuality and say that because you practice this, you're deemed to go to hell. Right? And it's not a message of love. It's not a message of redemption. It's not a message of anything but hate. You want to cure AIDS by killing all gay people. That was his message. I want to cure AIDS by killing all the gays, right? And so here's another thing too. Like when I get into these arguments with a lot of folks about whether or not gay people or the LGBTQ community has the same sort of struggle as the black community, right? Because this instance gets brought up a lot in this product. Chance is going to get brought up later on in this show, right? So we hear these things about the LGBTQ community not having the same struggles as black folks, right? And it's the same thing here. That same Bible was also used to justify the subjugation of black people when it came to slavery. The Bible was used in a way to subjugate a whole race of folks. Folks justified slavery by using the Bible. Here you have a man justifying genocide by using the Bible. He's going to wipe out all the gays to cure AIDS by Christmas. And you hear chuckles and shit coming out of the congregation while he's saying that. They think it's a joke. They don't respect these people as human beings. They see themselves as others, or they see themselves as exalted above these folks. I mean, it would have been very interesting to see the makeup of that congregation. It would also be very interesting to figure out what their racial attitudes were, right? Because if this is the kind of message that you're spewing about homosexuals, then imagine how you feel about other people whom are deemed minorities in this country, right? So it's one of those instances of, but I don't really like your Christians. And it's far too many instances of this happening across the country, where folks are using the Bible to justify their bigotry and their hatred. And it's fucked up in the sense of where you have good, good, well-meaning Christians who just want to go about life living as Christ did, or doing their best to live as Christ did, falling short, but recognizing that they fall short, recognizing that everyone else falls short, and continuing to try to live in love and harmony. That's not necessarily a naive way to think about things. if you really and truly love yourself and you want the best for everyone around you, then you would move in that kind of motion. You would move in those, you would navigate in that way. But for whatever reason, far too many folks in the Christian community find themselves spewing this kind of nonsense, propagating this sort of hate. And it isn't called what it really is. And that was hate speech. Right? That was hate speech, man. Anytime you call for the eradication of a whole group of people, you just want to wipe them out because you think it would be better for you. That isn't the most productive thing in the world to say, right? It isn't the most sane thing in the world to say, right? Hitler's saying the same shit. You know, if we get rid of these Jews, man, life would be all right over here in Germany. We just got to get rid of these motherfuckers. We'd be all right. Whole nation of folks wiped out because somebody thought they could use the Bible or they could use religion to justify a genocide or the eradication of a whole nation of people. Man, it's fucked up. And yeah, man, I can't believe that more folks aren't as upset about these sorts of things as they should be, especially other Christians, when they hear someone like this spewing this nonsense. It's almost like, say, for instance, when police brutality happens and everybody asks for the police to or the good cops to call out the bad cops, right? You want the good cops to call out the bad cops, like, hey, man, if you don't stand by this, you need to call these motherfuckers out and put them out, you know, and put them out of your order, man. You need to not let them represent you. If you want everybody else to believe that y'all good, you need to get these kind of guys away from y'all, right? And the same principle applies when it comes to Christian ministers or those who claim to be Christians and they're using the pulpit to spread hate speech, pretty much. When it comes to instances like that, hey, man, a lot of Christians need to step up and say, hey, that's not the message of Christ. That's not the message that we believe in. And y'all need to get away. Y'all need to get from around here with that nonsense. Y'all need to miss us with this foolishness. So, yeah, man. Yeah, I'm going to get off of that. But I thought that was real fucked up. I saw that and I was like, yo, that's yeah, that was real rich. That was real rich to say that we can get rid of the gays to get rid of AIDS, man. I was real rich of that dude, and fuck him, right? Fuck him. The next story that I kind of wanted to talk about, another fucked up story, because this is fucked up week outside of, you know, the whole marriage thing and everything. But I know you guys have heard about the high school teacher over in Georgia. I forget exactly what county in Georgia, but there was a high school graduation where the valedictorian wasn't allowed to give their speech, right? Principal forgot the order in which the program was supposed to run and started dismissing folks from the graduation, right? So after dismissing folks from the graduation and realizing her error, she got a little frustrated when folks weren't necessarily responding the way that she thought they should. Here's what happened. Look who's leaving. All the black people. You people. Here's the thing. It's one thing to be upset at the fact that, you know, the service isn't necessarily going the way that you planned it to. It's one thing to be upset that there were folks leaving the graduation. It was another thing to be upset that, you know, this valedictorian didn't get a chance to say their speech, right? Those are legitimate things to be upset about. When, you know, folks being maybe unruly or whatever else, or maybe just the way in which you handle that situation. But to go about it and start calling out the black families, you know, to say that, well, it's you people, the black people, look at who's leaving, all the black people, as if you aren't surprised. You aren't surprised that these are black people that are getting up and they're leaving. And then act surprised that folks attributed that to being racism, right? That they attributed that to being racism because you specifically pointed out that it were black folks leaving. You could have left the race out of it, and I don't think anybody would be as upset as they are now if she'd have just left the racism out of it. She didn't have to point out that there was black people leaving out of the graduation ceremony, right? She didn't have to point that out at all. And it goes back to into the whole thing of what people believe, you know, behind closed doors, right? Because, you know, a lot has been made about the fact that this woman, she was the founder of this school. I think it was TNT Academy. It was an alternative school for high school level kids who, for whatever reason, were falling through the cracks through the Atlanta school system or whatever. And, you know, she opens up this school and everything else. Now, she's been fired since from the board of directors of that school has since fired her after this incident. But it goes into the psyche and the mindset that one has at home when they don't think anybody's listening. And then you get out in public and you say some foul shit and then you try to act like, nah, that ain't what I meant. You say something stupid and act as if nobody is supposed to call you to the carpet on it, right? So she tried to say she wasn't trying to be racist, right? She goes on to apologize. So here's her apology.
Her comments were in response to people leaving before the valedictorian speech. But she tells CBS 46's Dante Ranzulli the video doesn't tell the whole story. He's live with her response to the internet outrage. Dante.
Oh, Mike, yeah, we're at the TNT Academy here in Stone Mountain. That woman featured in the video is the principal and founder of the private school. Now, this video has really been making the rounds on the internet. A lot of people saw it, and because of that, she's been getting hate mail and even death threats. But today, she's apologizing on camera, and we were the first television station to speak with her.
I'm sorry this has gotten all blown out of proportion because just part of the video is being seen and not the whole.
Nancy Gore-Duke and her school are in the spotlight for all the wrong reasons. Captured by a spectator in the crowd of this graduation, the video shows the principal's reaction to what she's calling rude disruptions during the ceremony. She says she was frustrated because people were not paying attention and were about to miss a speech from the student with the highest grades. But she says the video takes her remarks out of context. She says moments before she said what she did, a man was causing a disruption in the audience and it made her very agitated to the point where she was not herself.
I told my husband it didn't even sound like me or feel like me even saying it. I'd like them to know that I apologize to everyone in attendance there. I'm sorry for what I said. Like I said, the devil was in the house.
Gore-Duke says she really understands the gravity of her remarks now, and she's already experiencing the consequences.
All these people from across the country, we've gotten over 100 emails, and they have been vulgar and really terrible.
All right. Now, here's why I don't necessarily believe that she doesn't believe that she didn't feel like herself saying that she couldn't believe that she said that, right? Right after that whole incident happened, her son went to Facebook to kind of respond to those who were coming at his mom, right? And he responded in racist ways. He even so far as challenged folks to fights. This fool gave out his address on Facebook, right? Not that it isn't hard to find folks, because it's real easy to find folks nowadays, but he gave out his address to Facebook for folks to come fight him. And in so doing, incited more racist comments, incited more racial commentary, incited more animosity towards him and his family. And it goes to show, I don't necessarily know if it's just his defense of his mom or if that's how they get down at home all the time. Right? Because he responded with the exact same type of rhetoric that she did when in response to all of the things that folks were saying in response to her. So you kind of like, you want to give to a certain degree, you want to give, you know, be like, hey man, maybe they've just fucked up. But then when you start thinking about, okay, well, her son says something about this shit off the cuff. He's on Facebook giving out his address. He wants to fight everybody. He's using racist remarks in order to do it. He's fanning the flames with this. And then it goes into that whole thing of, we didn't know what we did was racist, right? Because they start talking about, I didn't know saying black people was racist. It isn't just the saying of, look at all the black people leaving. It isn't just that saying that's racist. It's the connotation behind it. You made a pointed effort to point out that it was a racial separation between the folks who were leaving and being disrespectful, and in turn saying that most of these black folks don't have no respect. They need to be put in their place. This is what's going on, right? This is how folks are reacting. That's why once you said that, all the black people are like, man, fuck this shit. I'm getting the fuck out of here. Fuck you, bitch. That's their attitude after that. I saw, you know, and you can see the video on thespinreport.com. You can go to YouTube. The video is available everywhere right now. But yeah, that's the attitude that a lot of folks took in. For you to act as if you're ignorant to that and you're supposed to be an educator, it's kind of ass backwards. If people wanted that kind of rhetoric, they're not supposed to get it at school. They're damn sure not supposed to get it at this from the high school principal. You know what I'm saying? Like, come on, man. You can't act like that. And you can't act surprised when folks are upset at the things that you said. Now, the whole sending death threats and shit like that, man, I ain't with that shit. That's corny as fuck. That's corny, man. Because a lot of y'all ain't about that life. A lot of y'all ain't going to do shit. A lot of y'all motherfuckers just sitting around, you know, typing some shit just to say some shit. That's corny, man. Stop that shit. It's dumb as fuck, right? But at the same time, for this woman, she's paying some consequences. She lost a job. She lost a job. But at the same time, you want folks to kind of get it to sink in and like, yo, this is why it was wrong. This is why what I said was wrong. And you can't fall into that denial of, well, I only said this and I don't understand why they're so upset. Like, try to understand why they're upset and stop trying to minimize what it is that you did to cause them to be upset. You know what I mean? So, yeah, man, fucked up. Another racist incident. Excuse me. This beer is really running through you, boy. Sorry. But, yeah, man. Yeah. Craziness this week. And I got a new segment. This week. I think this is going to carry over. And, one of the things I want to do is I want to pay, give special attention to those in public life, to those in the media, to those who pop up on the news, to give them their to give them their shine when they do something extremely stupid. And we have the ass hat of the week.
Yo, we got some hats now, motherfuckers.
And the ass hat of the week award is going to go to someone who says something extremely stupid, someone who does something extremely stupid, or just something that you guys can submit. Because here's the thing now. I want you guys to submit to me your ass hat of the week submissions. Go ahead and send me things that you think are really fucking stupid that you want me to address here on the show. Send them to me and they could be used on the ass hat of the week segment of the show. So the first ass hat of the week is Raven Simone.
No offense to everyone who's going to be mad at me for saying this. I don't like that idea. I don't like
it. Why not?
I think we need to move a little bit more forward. There's a lot of other ways. Yes, I understand. Let me just preface. I understand the history. I get it. Trust me. I was taught. I'm in that culture. But there was also William Mann Killer. There's also Rosa Parks, Eleanor Roosevelt, and Harriet Tubman. And I would have, me personally, I would have chosen Rosa Parks. I would have chosen someone that is closer to the progression that we're doing now. And I know you have to understand history so you don't repeat it, but that doesn't really happen in our world because we still repeat history of hating other cultures over and over again. So I would choose a different one, no offense.
All right. Here's what Raven said was fucked up. First things first, you don't have to denigrate the accomplishments of Harriet Tubman to uplift the accomplishments of Rosa Parks, right? That's number one. Number two, you don't necessarily have to try to burnish your black street cred or your black knowledge cred by saying I'm of that culture. As of lately, you haven't necessarily been showing that you have been of the culture or willing to even acknowledge that you are part of the culture. It seems as of late, you've been going out of your way to kind of distance yourself from the culture. And by embracing all of these other cultures and all of these other things, and not saying that those things are not saying that that's wrong, but you go to a certain degree of, well, I'm all of these things and this is just a small part of who I am, but I'm of the culture, you know, but this is just a small part of who I am. So Raven Simone has gotten to a point where we can't necessarily take anything Raven Simone says seriously. And we, you know, and another thing too, when she's on The View now, I think she's a regular on The View now. The View knows exactly what they're doing. The View knows this girl is pretty much going to say some really crazy shit. And she's almost I think she's kind of like the replacement for Elizabeth Hasselbeck. Now, remember, Elizabeth Hasselbeck used to be a really conservative contributed to the show on The View. She's since now moved on to Fox News, where I think she's on Fox and Friends now, and she gets to, it's like a safe haven for her to spew a lot of these conservative talking points and beliefs. And so to a certain degree, Raven Simone has kind of supplanted Elizabeth Hasselbeck with saying some really crazy and, not to be quite honest, not the most, you know, smartest shit in the world, right? That's her role. Folks go to listen. They know if they listen to Raven Simone, she's going to say something that isn't necessarily the smartest thing in the world. Same thing with Stacey Dash. They've been saying some really problematic shit the last few weeks, the last few couple months. So, yeah, for taking this opportunity, instead of celebrating that, hey, not only is it a woman that could possibly be on the $20 bill, but it's also a black woman who's being honored with the possibility of being on the $20 bill. Instead of just celebrating that, you wanted to denigrate that and talk about why it should have been someone else, right? And so for that, Raven Simone is the asshat of the week.
Yo, we got some hats now, motherfuckers.
Right? So, yeah, I'm going to have a bumper or some shit like that later on for asshat of the week, man. Yeah, man. But you know what? We've come up to the feedback portion of the show. And of course, again, if you want to send in feedback, hit me up at feedback@thespanreport.com for all of your emails. And go to call me at 313-288-0485, the hotline, and leave your voicemails there for the listener feedback portion of the show. And right now I'm going to go and you know what? I'm going to go with my voicemails first. I'm going to go with the voicemails first. I got a voicemail here. Check it out.
What up, Span? This is Evo8 from Twitter. Just wanted to comment on the white denial section of the podcast from the most recent episode. Essentially, with the Draw Muhammad concept, I'm truly wondering how Christians would feel if a non-Christian held a contest called Draw Christ Upside Down Crucified while Paul shifts in his face. Let's see how much they like that and see if they would actually begin to understand how Muslims feel about the Prophet Muhammad being drawn. While there is, quote-unquote, freedom of speech, and there is, the Christians all across this nation would be, you know, they'd be outraged, basically, if that was the case, and they'd be saying the forefathers would be rolling over their graves, even though some of the forefathers were not Christian, and there's separation of church and state here in the United States that really no one seems to actually follow. So just my little two cents on it. You know, if it was flipped to where Christianity was being mocked, as it should be sometimes, people would have a fit. So keep up with the show. I'll keep listening from here.
All right. Appreciate it, Evo. Thanks for calling in, brother. Yeah, man. Here's the thing. To a certain degree, I think that for a fact, we know that a lot of Christians would be upset. A lot of Christians would be outraged. A lot of Christians would be ready to burn some shit down, shoot some shit up, and everything else. I don't know if it's, you know, to the point of we gonna go and take folks out, right? Not to the same degree. I don't think it's to the same degree those kind of reactions, unless you're talking about maybe abortion, right? I remember years ago, man, there used to be a lot of Christian fundamentalist groups who would go to abortion clinics and bomb abortion clinics or kill abortion doctors or those who were suspected of being baby killers, so to speak. Excuse me. So, yeah, man, I think to a certain degree, man, it's a lot of Christians that would be upset at that kind of imagery. Right. And they would, you know, they would raise hell about it. But the thing of it is that they already try to impose Christian values on everything in American life, right? They already try to do that when they talk about the abortion laws, when they talk about abstinence. There was a story that came out of Texas about a high school where 20% of the population, that high school population, had to clap because they didn't want to teach these kids proper sex education. They wanted to teach them abstinence, right? Abstinence is cool. It's not necessarily realistic to expect all of these kids to practice it. So that's a Christian fundamentalist kind of thing to where, you know what, we're going to pray away the fact that these kids going to have sex. We're going to pray that these kids don't engage in this sinful activity, right? It's a bit naive and it's a bit kooky, well, you know, for lack of a better term, man. But at the same time, man, Christians would lose their shit the same way Muslims would lose their shit. But I think for the most part, because this is a majority, you know, because the majority of folks kind of identify themselves as Christians here, they don't necessarily see it the same way, right? And the First Amendment is always brought up in instances like this. We're fighting for the First Amendment. We're fighting for our right to speak freely and everything else. And everybody says that. Everybody says we're fighting for the right for freedom of speech. They never think about the consequences behind what it is that they say. And that's where we have to get folks, you know, we have to get folks there. You have to think about the consequences behind what you say. So if you know that this is antagonistic, then you should expect somebody to, you know, maybe get back at you to a certain degree, right? You should expect somebody to get back at you. You were antagonistic towards these folks. Expect some, you know, somebody to like, hey, man, that wasn't cool. Now, it might be a punch. It might be a conversation. Somebody may show up with a gun, but if you're going to go about the action of doing something like that, then you should definitely respect some type of repercussion on the back end of that. And that's pretty much why I said that the Draw Muhammad contest was pretty much the free speech equivalent of yelling fire in a crowded theater, man. But again, I appreciate you for calling in, Evo, and call in again or write in again, brother. I'd love to hear from you again. Real talk. But also, let's see. Let's get into these emails. I got a couple emails to respond to. And the first email I got is from Taiwan. And Tyron writes in, he says, first off, I don't condone violence against anybody. I didn't listen to the podcast yet. I saw it posted and fast forwarded to the comment section. I do use restraint. All I was saying was I have seen my moms put hands on my dad. She would try to fuck him up over silly shit. He never hit her back. I guess he is a better man than me. I have had a good friend put his hands on his girl. I've seen that and believe that it was out of line. All I was saying is once you have been in a relationship for some time, women know the right buttons to push and they push them to that limit. I'm not saying it's right at all. And at that point, you should probably leave the relationship, but that's not the reality. Most people stay and usually beat the shit out of each other. I have a 7-year-old daughter and a 4-month-old son. If anyone puts their hands on them, I would wind up in prison. My baby mama used to try to fight me over bullshit. I wasn't in a position to leave, so I took it. I called the cops on her. She was charged with domestic abuse, but it still didn't stop. It didn't stop until I started fighting back. She's from Chicago. That could be the reason. Hey, man. But I never put my hands on women because I wasn't raised that way. All I was saying was, I'm not about to get fucked up by a woman and have her throw out the excuse, oh, I'm just a girl. Like I said before, everyone should keep their hands to their fucking self, but I respect your opinion. Still love the show, Taiwan. All right, brother. Here's the thing. I wasn't trying to make that a personal attack on you. I wasn't even trying to make that an attack on you. I was just pretty much trying to elaborate on the point of men, us as men, using restraint when it comes to domestic altercations with women, right? Because at the end of the day, more often than not, we have a physical advantage when it comes to altercations with women. A lot of times we're stronger than women. A lot of times we can inflict a lot more damage than women. Sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes, right? So the thing of the restraint is being able to get up and sometimes walk away. Like you said, you walked away from a lot of shit. Now you said you fought back. I don't know how you fought back, but maybe sometimes the fighting back is holding that woman at bay. You know what I mean? Like kind of holding her arms, some sort of way defending yourself, not necessarily beating the hell out of a woman, right? And so I'm not by any means telling dudes to like not defend yourself, right? I'm not telling you not to defend yourself, but I also want you to understand the consequences and everything that goes around what happens in a domestic dispute between a man and a woman. I want you to be conscious of everything that happens. Or all of the consequences around that. Same thing with that free speech altercation or that free speech thing. You have to be conscious of the consequences behind it. So if you're in an altercation with a woman and it winds up being physical, understand that you stand a chance of going to jail. And you stand the chance of having, you know, that jail term or that visit to jail be a little bit more lengthy than you anticipated. Right? And the key a lot of times is understanding who you're with, understanding the people that you're around, and knowing how to navigate situations with the people that you're around. Remember, I said on that show that I try to put myself in positions to where I don't necessarily have to do a lot of things, right? A lot of that is just keeping myself away from certain people. Now, you said that was your baby, you know, your kid's mom. You have to deal with this woman for the rest of your life, man. So in knowing that you have to deal with this woman for the rest of your life, man, you just have to kind of know what, you know, how to navigate around keeping that kind of shit from happening. You know what I mean? And you did the right thing by calling the police. And you did the right thing by exercising restraint and not knocking her out. I want you to keep doing that. I want you to just kind of have that in your head, man. Like, yo, man, this shit could be ugly for me. This shit could end ugly for me, right? And exercise that restraint, brother. I wasn't trying to make that about you or, you know, or anything like that. That was a message for all brothers, man, to exercise a level of restraint. And that's a strength that a lot of brothers don't necessarily have, to learn how to exercise restraint when it comes to dealing with a physical altercation with a woman, man. But I appreciate you listening, Taiwan, and I hope you write in again and you continue to listen, brother. Real talk. The next email I got is from Renee. And Renee writes in to say, how you doing, Span? This is Renee again. And let me first say congratulations on the upcoming marriage. I hope it brings all the love and happiness and joy that your heart desires. Well, thank you, Renee. It really is great to see and hear about love with all the things going on in the world. And as long as I've been listening to you, I feel almost like I know you. And I'm so rooting for you guys. And I wish you all the best. Well, thank you again, Renee. Thank you again. But of course, I'm also writing in because I want to get your opinion of the new Spike Lee movie being filmed in Chicago called Chi-Raq. Seeing as how you're from there, how do you feel about the flack that Lee has gotten? And do you think it's warranted? Thanks in advance for reading my email. All the best, Renee. Okay, yeah, you know what, the interesting thing about the Chi-Raq movie, I know a lot of folks have been given, you know, they've had some mixed feelings about the name Chi-Raq. A lot of folks from Chicago have issues with that name. They have issues with that nickname because it isn't born from love, right? It's born from Chicago being a fucked up place to be, right? You know, it talks about the murder rate in Chicago and how many people die in comparison to what's going on in the war-torn Iraq, right? So I get why a lot of folks are, you know, they got some misgivings about it. You know what I mean? I kind of feel like we need to give this project a bit of we kind of need to see what this project is before we could really kind of come down on it. You know what I mean? Like, I remember there was a show called Detroit 187. It didn't last long. I think it maybe got two seasons. And before that show ever aired, I did have issues with the name. I was like, damn, why did they have to name the shit Detroit 187? You know what I mean? And but as I got a chance to watch the show and things like that, and I saw some of the things that was happening around the city because the show was here, I was like, oh, well, you know, it probably isn't. My initial concerns were kind of, you know, kind of put aside, so to speak, right? So I think we should give this the project a chance just to see what it is first before we can really come down on the name. But I understand why folks are mad, because here's the thing, and I think a lot of folks don't necessarily think about this when they talk about Chicago, is that we hear about the number of murders that come out of Chicago. We always hear about the gang violence that comes out of Chicago. Anytime you listen to Fox News or any type of conservative pundit talking about crime, one of the first examples they always give is they give Chicago as, you know, the murder capital of the United States, right? They always talk about Chicago. But what folks don't necessarily know or aren't even necessarily looking for or understand is that Chicago's crime numbers have been dropping steadily for quite a while, right? I lived in Chicago in the 80s. I lived in Chicago in the 90s, or the latter half of the 90s, right? Yo, Chicago was off the fucking chain in the 80s and 90s. You had murder rates where like the yearly total was topping almost over 900 murders for the year, right? 900. Those were the numbers in the 80s and the 90s. Today you may get close to 500 murders. You know what I mean? Like four to 500 murders a year in Chicago. It's like a 50% drop. I don't have the stats in front of me, but I've looked this up before. It's almost a 50% drop in the amount of murders that is happening in Chicago compared to what was going on in the 80s and 90s, right? So it's a little bit of a misnomer to call Chicago Iraq or Chirac and compare it to war-torn Iraq. Because even though the crime in Chicago is high, it isn't where it was, right? It isn't nowhere near where it was. And the problem that I think comes from that is there's so many folks who are from Chicago or who currently live in Chicago who have internalized and embraced this term. They've embraced the Chirac moniker. Especially the street element, right? Because, you know, everybody wants their ghetto to be the hardest, you know. And I remember old Ghetto Boy song, like, "Your ghetto ain't no harder than mine." I think Willie D said that shit. He wasn't the best rapper in the Ghetto Boys, but he said that shit and it was pretty much true. Your ghetto ain't no harder than mine. But a lot of the street element kind of embraces this term, right? And then you have the element of social media, right? Social media is a powerful medium. We've seen how social media has been able to galvanize a lot of folks around the country to bring attention to a lot of things. So when you look at the aspect that social media has allowed folks to say, hey, Chirac, 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 and it gets ingrained and folks from Chicago are embracing it. And folks who aren't paying attention, folks who don't necessarily know, all they hear is Chirac, 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 and they're hearing about all of these murder numbers coming out of Chicago, not knowing that Chicago has had a 50% drop in murders over the last 20 years. When all they know is Chirac and they equate Chirac with murders, then, you know, if I'm somebody who's not paying attention, what am I to believe? Right? I'm equating Chicago with the murder capital of the U.S., right? Or the murder capital of the world, right? This is what I'm equating Chicago to. So I think sometimes we have to take it. We have to really be mindful of the messages that we're sending out, even though we don't necessarily think that we have that much reach. Right. Because I believe to a certain degree that social media has helped propagate this message of Chicago being the murder capital of the world or being the murder capital of the United States when it really isn't. Flint, Michigan has more murders in per capita than Chicago does. And like I said, Chicago's murder rate has steadily dropped over the last 25 years, almost 50%, a 50% drop since the 80s and 90s. So, yeah, man, I get why folks have some misgivings about the project. I do. But at the same time, I think that for Spike Lee, I think for this movie, we kind of have to give this movie an opportunity to show, to see exactly what it is he's showing of Chicago. You know, if he's like doing some real fuck shit and he's being a real hack about it and he's not necessarily giving Chicago a fair light in his movie, then we can shit on it all day long. But before this movie comes out and before we see anything about it, I think we should really give him an opportunity to kind of let this process play out, and we'll see what happens from there. But thank you again, Renee. And thank you for the congratulations. I appreciate it, Sister Real Talk. The next email I got is from Reggie. Reggie emails me to say, my man Span turning in the player card and hanging up the jersey. congratulations on the nuptials, man. This is awesome. She must be a pretty amazing chick if she got you ready to hang it up in these streets, man. Much love and much respect to the future Mrs. Span. Hopefully we'll get to hear her on the show. Yeah, man, I hope so too. The Span Report times two. All right, man, I'm out. Keep up the good work, my dude, Reggie. Thanks, man. Thank you. And yeah, she is amazing. She is amazing. I love that girl, man. She is amazing. I can't wait for this wedding, man. I know I done said that a few times before, man, but I can't wait for this wedding either. So I appreciate you, brother, for writing in, and thank you for the congratulations, man. Real talk. And the next email I got is from Reggie again. And Reggie writes in to say, hey, Span, really quick, I wanted you to check out this video of Dr. Umar Johnson and give your thoughts on the illusion of inclusion in America. Thanks, Reggie. Okay, and he sent the link that I checked out, right? So, illusion of inclusion. It was a Dr. Umar Johnson. There was a town hall meeting that was done on TV1 with Roland Martin of TV1. They were talking about the Baltimore riots, and he asked Dr. Umar Johnson a question, so I'll play that clip real quick for you guys, and I'll respond here.
Umar Johnson. We talk about changing the dynamics in dealing with this in our communities. The reality is communities are not going anywhere, cops not going anywhere. And so how do we move forward? How do we coexist? How do we reach that point where there's trust on both sides?
Good question. Firstly, I would say that the adults in the community have to recognize that the children are increasingly intelligent. They know what works and they know what don't work. So lying to them is not a solution. And I'm saying that to say that through this whole ordeal in Baltimore, I've heard a lot of adults tell the children that the best thing they could do to deal with police brutality is to go home and let the political process take course. We know that's not true. And we also know that in the history of any struggle, Roland,
excuse me, I need
civil disobedience has its place. And as African Americans, we've never gotten anything in this country, freedom from slavery, the Civil Rights Bill, the Voting Rights Act, without breaking some laws. I would also add that we have to be careful about falling for the illusion of inclusion. I am disgusted with us always trying to fight every other people's struggle except our own. We are black people. And when Latinos fight, they fight for Latinos. And when Arabs fight, they fight for Arabs. And when the LGBT fight, they fight for LGBT. So we got to fight for us, not everybody else.
All right. Here's the thing. And I know I've been like a real big critic of Dr. Umar Johnson, but I'll surprise you in saying that I agree with some of what he said here, right? The whole thing of not lying to our kids, I agree with that. I agree that in order for a lot of things to happen, we got to kind of break some laws, right? The whole uprising in Baltimore, I spoke about the fact that unfortunately, a lot of times, those in the powers that be don't necessarily pay attention until you start burning shit down. And that we've seen this time and again, where even in Baltimore, where they protested for peacefully for a week, nobody came down there and paid attention to them. No, there was no Fox News. There was no CNN. There was no MSNBC down there. It wasn't until some shit really popped off that everybody started paying attention and we started seeing indictments of the officers and everything else, right? So I agree with him there. Here's the thing, though. I really think he just can't help himself when he talked about the illusion of inclusion. And he talked about the Latinos fighting for themselves and the LGBT community fighting for themselves and the and all these other groups, right? Especially when he talked about the LGBT community. He kind of forgets that the LGBT community also encompasses itself in all of these other communities as well, right? So there are gay Latinos, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transsexual, queer Latinos. There are gay, lesbian, bisexual, transsexual, queer black folks. Like, all of these minority groups encompass the LGBTQ community, right? So it's one of those things where I feel like we can't necessarily, it's like somebody saying we can't walk and chew gum at the same time, right? We can't walk and chew gum at the same time. If I see some injustice going on over here, I can't necessarily give that any attention because I got my own shit going on. I can't pay that any attention. That ain't got shit to do with me. I got my own struggle to worry about, right? And so you start isolating yourself off from everybody else. Isolate yourself. Separate yourself from everything else, right? And I remember, you know, well, just going back into the history, how Malcolm X embraced that. He embraced that, you know, that philosophy about separation, you know, the black man moving away from the white man and having his own land and having his own laws and having his own way of life and how he does things, right? Separation completely. And then you think about when Malcolm went to Mecca and he saw that there were Muslims of all colors and all, you know, in all shapes and forms, and that it was only in America where this caste system was put in place, where we separated from, you know, the blacks and the whites and the separate but equal and everything else. And so he embraced help from other areas, the same way that Dr. King embraced help from other areas in order to get things done. At the end of the day, as much as we love Dr. King and Malcolm X, they didn't get everything done by themselves. They didn't get everything done by themselves. And we can't fall into this notion or fall into this line of thinking that, yo, we gonna do this shit by ourselves. We ain't. African Americans only make up 13% of this population in this country, man. We're not even the largest minority anymore. We're gonna have to have some allies. We're gonna have to have some people who look out for us the same way that we would look out after someone else, right? We can't necessarily deny the LGBTQ community because a lot of them are black people too, right? They black folks too. A lot of Latino folks are dealing with some of the same shit that we're dealing with. Why not join up with these folks and make it so where, I don't know, you have a larger block of folks who are fighting and calling for the exact same thing so that those in the power that be have to pay a bit more attention when you got all these brown and black folks mad at them. All these brown, black, brown, yellow, LGBTQ people are coming down on you like, hey, man, this shit got to change. And it got to change like now. We only 13% of the population. Nobody's ever got anything done without allies. It hasn't been done. Nobody's ever done anything and didn't have allies. We didn't have allies to get the Voting Rights Act passed. We didn't have we had allies when we had the the Civil War. Like, it was so many different things where somebody who didn't necessarily suffer the same struggle that we did stepped up and said, hey, that shit over there ain't right, and we probably should do something about it. So I think it's misguided to tell folks that, hey, don't worry about that shit over there. Just focus on this shit right here, man. If I see some injustice going on any motherfucking where, I'm going to speak to it. And I think that's the problem that I have with Dr. Umar Johnson, is that so often he finds himself trying to separate from everything else. He tries to belittle everything, you know, other struggles, and elevate the black struggle above everything else. And I get that the black struggle may be more important or the most important thing to you. But at the same time, we can't not address injustice anytime we see it. We can walk and chew gum at the same time. We don't have to pick and choose. We can do all of them. We can do all of them. It takes a little bit of courage to do that, right? But I appreciate you, Reggie, for sending that to me. And for writing in, brother, I'd love to hear from you again, brother, real talk. But it's coming to the end of the show. And coming to the end of the show. But again, if you want to hit me up here at the Spirit Report Podcast, let your voice be heard. You can hit me up at the hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave me those voicemail messages. I will play those and respond to those on the show. You can hit me up with the email. The email, of course, is feedback@thespinreport.com. That's feedback@thespinreport.com. Leave me those emails. I will reply to those emails here on the show. If you want to send me your new Ass Hat of the Week awards, send me those submissions. Go to asshat@thespinreport.com. Send those ass hat submissions to asshat@thespinreport.com. And it could possibly be used on the show. If you want to chop it up with your man on Twitter and Instagram, hit me up on both of those platforms. My name is Mr. Underscore Span on Instagram and Twitter. Review the show. Send me some reviews. iTunes, Stitcher, 5-star preferably. Review the show on iTunes and Stitcher. And for all of your Spirit Report needs, go to thespiritreport.com and check out all the episodes, all of that shit. All of the episodes, all of my guest appearances, everything, all of the videos, everything is available at thespiritreport.com. But I got to get off of here, y'all. Game of Thrones has already started, and I got to watch. So until next time, fam, peace.